AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. A 22-year-old woman and two brothers have been arrested following the shooting deaths of two Hattiesburg, Mississippi police officers. Warren Strain is a spokesman for the State Department of Public Safety.
Two people have been charged with two counts of capital murder. One person has been charged with accessory after the fact of capital murder.
Strain says Joni Calloway and 29-year-old Marvin Banks are both charged with murder, while 26-year-old Curtis Banks is charged as an accessory. Investigators are trying to figure out what led to the shooting deaths of officers Benjamin Dean and LaCorey Tate during a traffic stop last night. It could be another severe weather day in North Texas. Thunderstorms rumbled all night into this morning after tornadoes touched down early yesterday evening. One person is known dead after a twister cut a five-mile path through ranches and farms near Cisco, Texas. Eastland County Judge Rex Field.
Destroyed several homes, damaged many others. At least one fatality has resulted from this tornado. We believe at this point that there are some other injuries.
From Colorado through Wyoming, the Nebraska Panhandle, and the Dakotas, it's snow. National Weather Service meteorologist Bruce Sullivan.
We've got a storm system, a late-season winter storm that's bringing some significant snows to parts of the Rockies, all the way up into the northern plains.
And both North and South Carolina are feeling the effects of Tropical Storm Anna. David Ray, who lives in Little River, South Carolina, says this early storm does cause some concern.
Yeah, this is early. Usually this doesn't start until September, October. So I hope that's not a prerequisite of what's going to happen for the year.
The National Hurricane Center says Anna will bring up to 3 inches of rain, high seas, and winds of some 45 miles per hour to the Carolina coasts. This is AP Radio News. First Lady Michelle Obama delivers a commencement address to graduates at historically black Tuskegee University.
Mrs. Obama's advice, be true to yourself. She warned the road ahead is not going to be easy.
It never is, especially for folks like you and me. Because while we've come so far, the truth is that those age-old problems are stubborn, and they haven't fully gone away.
Those age-old problems are discrimination and race.
My husband and I know how frustrating that experience can be.
The First Lady says frustration, like what has been seen in Baltimore and Ferguson, Missouri, is not an excuse to give in to despair and anger. I'm Ed Donahue.
In the NBA playoffs, the Washington Wizards up 2-1 in their series with the Atlanta Hawks, winning 103-101 on a last-second shot by Paul Pierce. Memphis has a 2-1 edge over Golden State, the Grizzlies beating the Warriors 99-89. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. Every day I wake up at 5 to give Dad his medicine. At 6, I make his breakfast. At 7, I shower. Every day I wake up
at 5. For those caring for a loved one, we hear you. That's why AARP created a community to help us better care for ourselves and the ones we love. Visit aarp.org/caregiving. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. With lower margins, your limited marketing budget has to work harder than ever. LinkedIn is one of the most robust marketing platforms available. With over 350 million members worldwide, 110 million in the U.S., and 3.1 million members within 50 miles of this station, I guarantee your customers and prospects are here. Connect, influence, motivate, create leads. I can show you how. When you want to maximize the return on your LinkedIn presence, email me at mark@federaldirect.net.
Green light. Hey, girl. School zone. I'm getting hungry. Car changing lanes. You want to meet me for pizza? Stop sign. Intersection clear. Yeah, street. Pizza sounds good. Ball in street? Girl in street!
It's hard to concentrate on two things at once, like texting and driving. Stop the text. Stop the wrecks. How will you stop texting and driving? Tell us at stoptextstoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. This is your host, Peter Schwartz, and I'm joined by my co-host, Joe Applebaum from Potomac Companies, Kristen Vozo from Verisov, and Wes Burnett with Optifor. We have a great lineup of guests on our show today, including Tom Smith, who's the Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Kathy Cannon, the Managing Director of the D.C. Office for Kelly, Dwyer, and Warren, Mark Chichester, the President of Atlas Research, and Louisa Jaffe, the CEO and president of a company called Technical Project Engineers. First up is Tom Smith, who's the executive director of American Society of Civil Engineers. Tell us a little bit about the American Society of Civil Engineers, Tom.
Greetings. The American Society of Civil Engineers was formed in 1852. It's a nonprofit organization. It's a 501c3. We're located in Reston, Virginia. We have 146,000 members representing the civil engineering profession. We're created to advance the science and profession of civil engineering for the welfare of humanity.
And you've been the executive director for how long?
I started in January of this year, so 4 months.
So, and did you have to compete for this position?
I did.
So why are you the ideal pick at this point in time?
I've been a member of ASCE for over 30 years. I joined back when I was in school in civil engineering in the 1980s. I have a passion for civil engineering. I think it's critical to the profession. I think ASCE is critical to the profession. I think civil engineering is critical to our public health, safety, and welfare and everything that we do.
So you have a passion for civil engineering. When did that begin? How young were you when you were starting to get interested?
That starts as far back as I can remember. Ever since I was a kid, I've had a passion for it.
Well, how did that manifest itself?
Virtually everything I did involved building and construction, whether it started with Legos, Erector sets, Lincoln Logs. I remember as a kid, we used to go out and build stilts, cutting down trees, and we'd literally have to step off a car to get onto these stilts that we built, and it all involved engineering principles. We built cars from trash that we found.
And you were the neighborhood guy organizing all these things?
I was in charge of all of it, yeah, absolutely. And so I spent all my time doing that.
You were an executive director at the grand old age of five?
Yes, I orchestrated all that and applying technical and professional applications as well.
So in your view, why is civil engineering so important?
Literally everything that we do is impacted by civil engineering. You know, I talk to my kids about this all the time, you know, when they leave the water running. And you know what it takes to bring that drinking water to you? And, you know, the energy that it takes and the know-how. And when you flush the toilet, do you know what happens when you do that? People take all these things for granted. A lot of it's sight unseen. But there's a lot of technology behind it and a lot of people that are working awfully hard to bring you your quality of life. And that includes, you know, bridges, structures, dams, levees, water treatment plants. Yeah. It impacts everything we do.
So take us back into your career a little bit. What other interesting things have you been up to?
Well, I started out in civil engineering. I went ahead and got a master's degree in structural engineering, which you really need if you're going to practice in that area. I felt at the time, though, that the focus was somewhat not as broad as I'd like, and I then decided to go on to law school. My father had done the same thing. He did that on the GI Bill. After doing that, I practiced law for a firm called Hazel & Thomas here in Northern Virginia.
Aren't they two wholly different and separate things?
You might think, but my entire law practice was working with civil engineers. I was involved in land use, and that includes really continues to this day. I mean, I'm still on the Board of Zoning Appeals and here in Fairfax County, working with civil engineers and land development. So it was all about land use, federal, state, and local level, and then also land use and construction-related litigation. So I worked with civil engineering the entire time and blended the two degrees together.
And you're a native from Fairfax, Virginia, is that correct?
Yes, sir. I grew up in Falls Church.
Mom and Dad, what were they doing growing up?
My father was a FBI agent. He worked for J. Edgar Hoover. And my mother was, she stayed at home. We had five children and grew up right near Seven Corners.
How do you suppose you were influenced by your dad?
Well, my father had a huge influence on me. If anyone asked me about, you know, mentorship, he's the person who automatically comes to mind. In fact, I wrote a book about him just, you know, he passed away this year on January the 1st, and he was 91 years old. But he was part of the American, you know, greatest generation. He fought in World War II under General Patton. He was in the 94th Infantry Division. He was in the Battle of the Bulge. He had a huge impact on me. Discipline, patriotism, integrity, professionalism, those were all things that he lived. And I've tried to emulate that. And I've just been very impressed by the things he was able to do. Not only what he did in World War II, the more I've learned about the things that he went through, but the way he recovered from it and led a normal life when he came back, raising five kids and having the career that he did of really public service. You know, he went and got a law degree on the GI Bill at George Washington University. He had left the Citadel to go, he enlisted it to go into the war. But I was just amazed at what he was able to do in his profession.
How about other mentors or important influences along the way?
You know, it's almost too many to count. I mean, I will say just at ASCE, each year we have a different president. So we're a nonprofit, we're an association. So it's run by a board of direction, and I'm the executive director. Each year, one of those people serves as president, has some trait that I draw from that served as a mentor.
I mean, you can't help but notice your passion for this work. What would you like your legacy to be as the executive director?
The legacy as executive director is to build an organization that speaks with one voice globally, with civil engineers as worldwide leaders advancing this profession and advancing the public health, safety, and welfare. So a legacy I'd like to see is first off, integrity, you know, living in the values that we have as an organization and that I have individually, but building an organization that is diverse, reflects the diversity, and that's a challenge that we have right now, is ensuring that the civil engineering profession reflects the diversity that we have in the public, advances sustainability, which is environmental, social, and economic sustainability, and is a global leader.
And how would you characterize your mother's influence on you?
She was the caring, nurturing part of that family. I really attribute her to my father's ability to lead a normal life, coming back from the things that he went through during World War II. She's really what held our entire family together.
So, when did you discover that your dad went through the things that he went through?
It's interesting because as a child, I really hardly even knew he was in the war.
Yeah.
And so it was only till probably 5 years ago that my dad started talking more about it, and I took an interest in it. And one of my kids was doing history projects, and we said, why don't we go over and interview Granddad? So we sat down, and I thought I was going to just talk to him for an hour or two. And then I said, let me take some notes so your kids will remember this. And then it went on, and the more I learned, it got to be pages and pages, and next thing you know, it was over 200 pages, and next thing you know, I published it as a book called Infantry Rifleman. So it just ballooned. This interest started with one, my youngest son, who's got a passion for history, and I learned more and more about it, and he didn't talk about it until that time. As it turns out, it was a blessing that we did it when we did, because he passed away, this year, and I really was able to do that. Well, and also talking with a lot of his friends.
Joe?
Well, that's an amazing story. So you've now created this book, which is also a legacy for your children. What is the next thing to build upon, let's use the word build, that you can use that within ASCE?
Yeah, this whole thing of, I think there's a lot from learning from the past, and frankly, the values that my father had are values that we want to instill in the organization at ASCE. And we've just gone through a whole program of just identifying what are our values as an organization. And as I look at them, a lot of them duplicate things that I learned from my father. So learning from the past, carrying those principles forward, has been very valuable. You know, ASCE's got a long history, created in 1852. There's a lot to be learned from our past.
So what's old is new again.
Exactly. There's a lot to be learned from that and carrying that forward.
What's the hardest thing you've ever accomplished?
Boy, that's tough. I don't know where to start. There's so many different things. But a lot of it, frankly, in the job that I have, what it involves is taking the best experts on all these different fields of civil engineering, whether it's structures, geotechnical, transportation, oceans, ports, coasts, all these different things, and bringing them together and bringing them to consensus. So that can be very challenging sometimes, because that's what makes us very strong as an organization, because we have so many diverse points of view, but we bring them together for a consensus. That's how we develop standards and publications.
Sounds like a classic engineering problem.
It is a classic engineering problem, but it's also a classic human problem. You know, it's like, as technical as we are as an organization, we still have, you know, very human issues. The same, you know, I'll share, I'm sure, with all the speakers here today, that as you progress in your career, it really boils down to relationships and working with human issues.
So your father's aware of your success?
Yes, he was very proud of it, absolutely.
If I had him here, what would he say about his son?
Well, he certainly would say he's proud. I know he was very honored that I was able to put this book together. And he's very humbled. He would say he doesn't deserve to be to have that kind of attention, but he's certainly very proud.
What's the website address for the association?
www.asce.org.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Tom Smith, who's the executive director for the American Society of Civil Engineers. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the Marketing Director.
And as a Marketing Director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Randy Tharp, Director of the 5-9 Group. Welcome, Randy. Randy, what is the 5-9 Group?
The 5-9 Group is an IT services company here in D.C., and we provide application solutions, DevOps, and program management for the federal government.
Mm-hmm. And what's your role in the company?
I'm the Director of Business Development.
So that means what?
So that means I'm the guy responsible for gaining new business.
Mm-hmm. And so what is it that makes the organization special in your view?
Well, the company was created out of the role that they play. It's called 5-9. So 99.999% availability is what our goal is, to serve our customers.
And what do they appreciate about you guys?
They appreciate that we can actually deliver that.
Mm-hmm. And who is the perfect client in your mind?
The perfect client is one who understands that we are one of the leaders and we're the innovators behind them, and they hired us for a reason and they let us do our jobs.
And what is it about the work that you enjoy most?
Well, the work we enjoy the most is because it's on high availability critical systems for the federal government. For example, DHS or Census Bureau, managing these databases are very important to the taxpayers and to America, so we take that very serious.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say that the clients get from all this work? Where's the value in it for them?
The value is being able to count on an industry leader on a contractor like us to get the job done and be available 24/7 to keep things going for them and bring solutions that matter.
That's great. And you got a website?
We do. It's www.59group.com.
Thanks, Randy. We've been speaking with Randy Tharpe, Director, 5-9 Group. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. You can hear the show again at businesstalkradio.net.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And for this segment, we have Kathy Cannon, who's the managing partner of the D.C. office for Kelly Dreyer and Warren, the law firm. Tell us a little bit about the firm.
Kelly Dry is a major law firm with offices around the United States, headquartered in New York, and with many offices, including our D.C. office that I currently manage. I practice in the international trade area, and our D.C. office focuses on a lot of regulatory practices that surround the U.S. government.
And how long has this law firm been around?
Kelly Dry has been around since the mid-1800s. It's a long-standing firm. The firm merged with a smaller firm called Collier Shannon, which was the firm that I started with about 30 years ago, based in D.C.
And so basically you've been with one firm your entire career?
That's correct. I've been with the same firm for 30 years.
Why?
Because I love what I do, and I love who I work with. And we get headhunters that call a lot and offer more money. And after a certain point in your career, you realize that there's no amount of money that can compensate for that.
So what is it that you value so much about your colleagues that makes sticking around 30 years a good deal?
My colleagues are a fabulous group of people. They are excellent at what they do. We put our clients first, and we do an excellent job for our clients, but we don't take ourselves seriously. We have a good time together. We work collaboratively extremely well. We feed off each other's strengths. And to know that whenever I need to be out, somebody has my back is fabulous to know, and that somebody that I trust and that's excellent that can do what our clients need to do.
So it sounds like a combination of admiration for their skills, but appreciations for who they are as human beings?
Exactly.
Yeah, and you're the managing partner of the D.C. office.
That's correct.
How long have you been in that role?
Just since January 1, so this is a relatively new position for me.
And how's that going?
Very well so far. It's taken a lot of adjustments. I'm learning a lot about the administrative side of the law practice.
Is this a role that you wanted?
It is. I had been the practice group leader of the international trade section of the firm, and that was one of the largest groups within the firm, and I've done that for the past 3 years before taking over this position. And I enjoyed that immensely. I had a great opportunity to come up with some new ideas on marketing, in promoting our practice, and I've now been able to expand that to the office as a whole.
When did it occur to you that you wanted to be a lawyer?
Way back when, I actually didn't want to be a lawyer. I wanted to be a teacher. I majored in elementary education in college, and I taught first grade for a while and spent a lot of time with children, which I loved. But somewhere along the way, after teaching for a little while, I decided I wasn't really probably going to be a teacher my whole life, and I mentioned to my dad I would like to look into something else, and he said, "I always thought you should go to law school. I wish I had gone to law school. I think you should try it." And when I talked with some others, they said, yeah, you know, the law profession has a lot of possibilities if you get that degree. So that's really when I made the decision to go into the practice of law.
When did you realize that you made a good decision?
Almost immediately. I really enjoyed law school, which is probably sounds crazy. Most people hate law school. I enjoyed what I was learning. I loved the interaction with the other students, and I particularly liked the international law area, which I got involved with relatively quickly on the International Law Journal. I became editor-in-chief, and then I got involved in moot court, and I became the coach of the international moot court team there. So I got involved in a lot of activities that I appreciated quite a bit.
Why international law? Why not mergers and acquisitions or some other thing?
Yeah, it was really purely coincidental. It happened to be the first writing competition of the school, and I love to write. So when that writing competition came along, I thought, well, let me try out for this. And after that, because I liked it, I stuck with it.
What were you like as a kid?
What I like as a kid. I was quiet, actually, relatively shy. I was very much into athletics. My father was a coach, and I ran track, and my dad coached for a bit, and then I got involved in softball as well. So I did a lot of athletics. I was, you know, a good student. I studied a lot, but I was the oldest of four kids, so I was somewhat of a leader with my family.
So, Kathy, so you're a leader, but you also coached sports, didn't you?
That's correct. I started coaching a track team when I was in high school, and that was one of my best experiences, I think, growing up.
So, but it wasn't a girls' track team, right?
That's correct. I inherited the boys' track team, and that was a little bit different back then. I think that people were surprised to have a girl, because I was relatively young, coaching the boys.
So how does that translate to now managing lawyers?
I think it was actually a really good experience, because as a result of interacting with the boys, I became very comfortable coaching boys and then interacting with men, because in the legal profession, as you know, most of the people are still men. And I should also mention, as an adult with my son, I coached soccer, and I coached his soccer team from the time they were in kindergarten until they graduated from high school. So 12 years of coaching soccer later as well, again with the boys.
So sports translates into business.
Sports does translate into business. In fact, it's one of the mantras I use. I basically say we're a team, and we function as a team, we work together as a team, and we collaborate. And that's been one of the hallmarks of the way that I've led the trade group and that I'm now trying to lead the office as a whole.
Excellent. So you came into law when there probably weren't a lot of women practicing law.
Correct.
Talk about some of the obstacles in the early days.
Yeah, in the early days when I was at school, I remember one interview in particular where a small firm, I went to school at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, and back then in the South, there wasn't quite as progressive as it is today, and one of the small firms that interviewed me said, we like your resume, we think it's very impressive, but I'm sorry, we just can't hire you because I couldn't introduce a girl to my clients. They wouldn't ever have a girl as their lawyer. And, you know, that took me aback quite a bit, and at the time, I basically didn't respond and say anything much to them. But in my mind, I thought, if they don't want me, I don't want them. And I'm sure I can find somebody that will want me as a woman.
So along the way, you've probably figured out how to inspire trust in people regardless of what their initial impression of you might be.
I hope so. I think that by doing what I do very well and turning out an excellent work product and being able to represent my clients and meet their needs, that's the most important thing that our clients need.
Great. What does success mean to you?
I think success means being able to perform in an excellent manner, to accomplish the goals that you set out to accomplish in the legal profession, to meet your clients' needs, but at the end of the day, to feel that you've done it in a way that rises to a certain level of ethical responsibility, both for you and for the people that you're interacting with every day.
What's an achievement today that you're most proud of?
You know, despite all the accomplishments that I've had in the legal world, what I'm most proud of is my two children. I've raised a boy and a girl, and I balanced my career working part-time while I raised them. They are absolutely fabulous people. They're in their 20s now, both in night law school, so I guess I didn't discourage the legal profession too much while they were growing up, but that absolutely is my proudest accomplishment, is my children.
So talk about the changes in international law from when you got started to where we are today. I mean, like in 30 years, we became a global economy, didn't we?
That's correct. And it's been a fascinating ride in the international trade world. When I first entered the practice back in the early 80s, a new law had just come on the books, and we were just learning to interpret it, and there wasn't enough trade for everybody to really figure it all out. And now it has exploded, and there's lots of complexities and nuances in international disputes. So it's been a great 30 years to participate in this particular area.
Great. What's the website address, Kathy?
Our website is www.kellydry.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Kelly Cannon, who's the managing partner of the D.C. office of Kelly Dry & Warren. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region.
with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work with in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight. This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is
David Zondi.
And David, what's the name of your company?
Pocket Math.
Tell us a little bit about Pocket Math.
We're a mobile ad platform.
And what does that mean?
Basically, it means that we give you access to the ability to advertise on mobile phones, tablets, in games, apps, and on mobile websites.
So if I'm a manufacturer of a product, I could actually advertise that product on a cell phone?
Absolutely.
Is that the wave of advertising now? Is that where we're all headed?
It's definitely the industry that is picking up steam.
And when did you, and you own this company, right?
Well, I'm one of people who runs the DC office.
I see. And why did you want to do this?
The entrepreneurial spirit, the opportunity to build something.
What makes you good at it?
I've done it before.
Uh-huh. Well, give us an example of somebody that's advertised successfully on a mobile device.
There's quite a few. Restaurants are excellent. Point of sale retail is an excellent example of, you know, using it when your proximity is close to the retail store.
Mm-hmm.
And delivering up a valuable coupon and then driving that individual back into the store.
And why do you think the consumer likes it?
It's personal.
So it can be personalized to the very phone?
It can be. The technology is still evolving, so it's not as detailed demographically as desktop or display. But as we evolve, we'll get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're able to do a lot on tracking via a device ID.
Mm-hmm. And why do you like this so much, personally?
It's just a fast-moving industry.
And what's the website address?
Pocketmath.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with David Sunday, who's with a company called Pocket Math. This has been your Business Spotlight. Thank you. We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And for this segment, we have Mark Chichester, who's the president of a company called Atlas Research. What is Atlas Research, Mark?
Atlas is a public sector management consulting firm specializing in domain expertise in health, servicing federal health clients, including VA and Department of Health and Human Services.
When was the company founded?
I co-founded Atlas in 2008 with my business partner, Ryung So, who's the CEO.
You co-founded it.
Yes.
And a few minutes ago, you were telling us when you decided to start the company, you went out and found a friend and a partner.
Yes. My sense is that it's not about the business so much as the people that you do it with or who you do it with. And if you get the right people with the right skill sets and level of commitment and with, most importantly, trust, you have something potentially very special.
So did you know your partner before you started the business?
I did. We'd met. We were both term members of the Council on Foreign Relations, and had met and were social, but not as close as we are today.
What were the clues that led you to believe this could be a good workable partnership? And what were you looking for in a partner?
Well, it was initially reputationally. I think we were introduced one to the other based on our respective reputations. I think I'd heard he's just a quality guy, hardworking, one of the smartest guys I've ever met, is what I heard from friends whose judgment I trusted. And so over drinks one night in New York, as we talked about approaching the milestone of 40, what our lessons learned had been and what we wanted to do with the rest of our lives, there was Atlas took form.
How'd you come up with the name of the company?
Interestingly enough, there was another individual involved at the founding of the business who was much more concerned about the name of the business and the branding of it. And he actually came up with the name Atlas and, you know, something with the four corners of the globe. Ryung joked and referenced, you know, Ayn Rand, and Atlas shrugged. And I said, no, we're not gonna cite that as the basis for it.
So 2008's an interesting time to start a business. If I recall, it was the start of a pretty nasty recession. So what were you thinking?
What I've always thought, which is, you know, show me some risk and let me go squeeze it and have some fun with it. I think Ryung and I are both of a temperament, you know, that really embraces the unconventional. And when people have told us throughout our lives what you can't do, we go and do it. And so I think it was, I mean, we literally referred to ourselves as a band of pirates, and it was, you know, swimming against the tide, doing things that folks told us we couldn't.
And the company's succeeding, and here you are in your seventh or almost eighth year. What makes the partnership continue to work and flourish?
You know, it really is a symbiotic relationship that we've developed. I mean, we were in a lunch meeting just the other day, and Ryung was a little tired from being up late the night before and was a little off in terms of the pitch. And just right on cue, I jumped in and was able to address that. Likewise, later in the conversation, I started to disclose some information that I shouldn't have disclosed, and right on cue, he stepped in to address that. I mean, it's almost like a marriage. And, you know, we were compelled to share an office with each other when we first moved into our bricks and mortar about 4 years ago. And when we moved into new and much nicer space over near the VA back in summer, we gave the architects the charge that they should design the office around a shared office for us. And so whether it's, you know, something going on in the business that particular day, or a health issue of both our moms are going through some pretty profound health issues right now, something going on with the kids, we share all of that, and it really does redound, I think, to the benefit of the business.
Yeah, you were telling us earlier you're a lifelong Washingtonian.
Fourth generation.
Give us some background on that.
So I grew up in a sleepy corner of the city in Northeast called Brooklyn, you know, tree-lined streets, old Victorian homes. In my neighborhood, within, I'd say, maybe a 4 to 5 block radius, there were about 4 or 5 Chichester households. And so had grandparents, aunts and uncles and cousins who were my babysitters, my mentors, my encouragers.
So because you came from such a tight-knit community, what did that allow you to become?
It gave me boundless confidence, even when I shouldn't have been confident. You know, I went abroad after law school to Korea, didn't speak a lick of Korean, and left that country after about 10 months speaking passable conversational Korean and being transformed. Whether it was at Sidwell Friends, where I went to school, or at George Washington University, where I was almost the only minority kid in the class, certainly at GW in business school, I didn't perceive it until after the fact. And so, you know, just that support network and the expectation yep. that you will succeed is...
And is it true right. that you live within blocks of your growing up home?
Yes, about 4.5 blocks from home.
So you just said a word, expectation.
Right.
It seems like that expectation of family has now... created a thread that runs through your business.
Absolutely.
Can you elaborate a little bit about that?
Absolutely. I mean, at the end of the day, and Tom spoke about this a little while ago, at the end of the day, it's about the people, right? And so you can have all of the expertise, you can have, you know, the best sort of niche positioning in a market or what have you. But if you don't have the right people and you don't have them aligned properly and motivated and believing and confident in themselves and in the business, I don't think you get the most out of it. And so I spend the vast majority of my time ensuring and facilitating the effective interaction, trust, and high expectations in our team.
So you've been on a trajectory for the last 7 years, so everything's been going gangbusters, correct? The whole time, right?
Not the whole time. You know, we hit a stretch of adversity where I think we were probably within about 2 weeks of running out of cash. And Ryung and I looked at each other and had to make some tough decisions. The decision was whether we fold the business and pull what cash we had there and take it for ourselves and get out, or whether we bear down, take the hit personally, which we decided to do, to protect as many of our folks as we could, and to fight forward to what we believed would be opportunity to come.
So when you went through that, you did explain that you had to make some decisions. How did those decisions translate to your employees? You must have let, you said you lost two-thirds of your contracts and your revenue. So did you let two-thirds of your people go?
We didn't let anyone go. We set up phone calls with every employee on the company on a Saturday. I was actually away at a wedding, and Ryung and I did from about 7 in the morning until about 8 that night. We talked to every employee, talked to them about what we could do in terms of the package, the compensation we could continue to pay them, and we made it clear to them that Ryung and I would not be taking compensation.
So this is not unheard of in American business, particularly small business, where the owners do heroic things to keep their company together. Looking back on it, why was it such a smart move? How was it good business to take the hit personally so that your employees could stay employed?
I think it sets an example of sacrifice and commitment that you'd like to see translate from your employees to our clients. I mean, at the end of the day, we want them to be leaders, and we talk about that. Be leaders in every facet of what you do for the company, whether that's as a research associate on site, the most junior person in the room taking notes. Be a leader in that capacity. Be a good team member. Be a collaborator. Be transparent. And the way we think that you do that is by living, which is ask of people.
You're at 100 employees. You care so much about each and every one of them. Do you worry that you're going to grow too big to do that anymore?
We've already reached, I think one of our advisory board members mentioned in a recent meeting that there's been some research done around tribes in Africa where the magic number is 73, which is sort of a magical tipping point. We certainly have felt an evolution in the way that folks relate to each other in the business, and I think there is some risk in losing some of that special sauce. And so in response to that, we probably spend 50, 60, 70% more time focused on protecting that and inculcating the values to our staff as we bring them on.
Who taught you to be successful?
That's a good question. I think I've had many examples of success, many mentors. I've had occasion to have been precocious enough to find myself on the radar of folks wherever I've been. So whether it's principals at school, a university president, the head of a company, I've always stirred up just enough stuff to get myself on their radar. And that getting onto their radar has brought me into proximity to them and into mentoring relationships that have just given me marvelous examples of success in life, in business, and in community. And I'm fortunate to have had those experiences.
What's the website address, Mark?
Website is www.atlasresearch.us, as in United States.
One more time, Atlas Research?
Atlas, A-T-L-A-S, research.us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been speaking with Mark Chichester, who's the president of Atlas Research. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. We'll be back in a moment right after this business call.
Joining us for this business spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close, would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No. Although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
And your name is?
My name is Joe Dugo.
Joe, what organization are you with?
I'm with Interstate Moving and Storage and Logistics.
And what do you guys do?
We do it all.
Like what?
We move anything and everything from every point to every point in the world.
That sounds like a pretty complicated operation, actually.
It isn't complicated. People call and they want to move a slot machine to Atlantic City, New Jersey. We'll do it. You need to move your father-in-law back to Britain, we'll move him internationally.
So you're getting
a divorce, we'll move the wife here, we'll move you there.
So what do you enjoy about your job?
I love knocking on that door and seeing what's in the inside, because I don't know. Every day I get to see four or five different people with different aspirations, different everything.
So you're in a business development role. Your job is to bring in new business.
I'm an old soldier.
What's that?
An interstate has a tough job to do.
Yeah.
If they need it done, they send Joe Dugo. That's me, 35 years in the business, to get the job done correctly.
So you're the guy, you're all about relationships and getting
stuff. You're absolutely correct. When I get in that door, it ain't about pricing. It's about talking. It's about details. What do you need? How can I solve them?
Boy, you know how to close a deal. What's the website address?
The website is invan.com.
Let me have that one more time.
It would be invan.com.
We've been speaking with, what's your name again?
My name is Joe Dugo.
And the name of the organization?
Is Interstate Moving and Storage.
And this has been your Business Spotlight.
Here for today's Business Spotlight is Chris Vannetti, Vice President of Contract and Project Staffing Services at Hire Strategy. Chris, what is Hire Strategy?
Hire Strategy is a D.C. Metro-based professional services and staffing firm specializing in information technology placements as well as HR and administrative, sales and marketing, and accounting and finance.
And what do clients love about working with Hire Strategy?
We take an old school approach to staffing. And what I mean by that is, you know, back in the day before social media and email, it was all about people. And we're one of the few and last firms in this marketplace, probably nationwide, that really interviews in person, takes the time to know their candidates, and 100% takes the time to know their clients, their pushes and pulls, the positives and negatives, to make the right match. So it's truly a consultative approach.
Mm-hmm. What do employees love about working for Hire Strategy?
It's definitely our culture. And the employees that work for us, I think they would all to a person say, we believe in leadership, not management. And that's one of our key mottos. And leading people is a definite thing that we like to do, and we like to do it often.
So what does that mean for a new employee? They get to be a leader?
They can get to be a leader, but they're leader of their own practice, of their own business. We allow them to be entrepreneurial. We allow them to make their own decisions, and we're there to help them along the way, correcting them if need be. But motivation and leadership is the one way that we think that people are going to excel with us.
What do you love most about your job?
I love that I get the opportunity to be a leader and to be entrepreneurial and work with a great bunch of people and a great group of executives along with myself. So it's a great place to be.
What's the website?
The website is www.hirestrategy.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Opta4. This is your host, Peter Schwartz. And for this segment, we have Louisa Jaffe, who's the CEO and president of a company called Technical Project Engineers, otherwise known as TAPE. What is it?
TAPE is a systems engineering small business specializing in contracting services to the federal government.
When was the company founded?
The company was co-founded by me and my husband, Bill Jaffe, in 2003.
And you were telling us earlier you started it to stay in service to the federal government. Is that true?
Well, I was in the Women's Army Corps starting in 1974, and I stayed in the Army Reserves for 28 years, which the 28th year was in 2001. So I was brought on active duty in the wake of 9/11 and expected to do a longer tour, a couple of years perhaps, but there was no stop-loss order from Congress at that time, and I had to get off of active duty. So that's what that was about.
Yeah, but why was it important to stay in service of this country to you?
Well, I was very passionate about being in the Army, partly at that time because I lost a young cousin in the World Trade Center, and also the plane that hit the Pentagon took out the public affairs office, part of the public affairs office where I served, and my actual desk went up in flames that day. So I felt it very keenly and personally, as did so many others.
Wow. And you help us understand your partnership with your husband. How did this all come about?
Well, I met my husband about that time, about the time that I had to get off of active duty in January of 2002. And I was bemoaning my fate. I was feeling so sorry for myself that I had to get off of active duty. And he said to me, maybe there's another way to serve your country. And after saying, aren't you even going to feel sorry for me, which he replied, no, I said, well, what do you mean by that? And he talked to me about government contracting. He said it's very important work. The government is starving for people who come from those military values of integrity and rigorous honesty, and they're looking for business people who understand business and the government, and you understand both. So he said that this may be another way for you to keep serving your country.
Yeah, but, I'm curious, go back previously, when the day that 9/11 occurred and your office got hit, what was it like to drive up to the building the next day and see what had happened?
It was unbelievably stunning to see that whole wall just gone, you know, just decimated. It's hard to describe it. I think that it impacted me in another way because one of my daughters was in college in New York at the time at NYU, and she was a photography student, and she went down in the streets of New York and took pictures all day and then didn't want to develop them because she wasn't even sure what she had photographed. And so my primary concern after 9/11 was for my daughter, and I made my way to New York as fast as I could to be with her. And just standing there and looking at that smoke coming up from the building day after day after 9/11 was just surreal.
Well, I'll never forget driving past the Pentagon with my son because school was canceled that day, and watching smoke coming out of that building.
Right.
And being impacted personally. It must have been really hard for you.
It was very hard. It moves me to this day. It's a part of history, of course, and so many people have so many feelings about it, but it will always be a personal event for me.
Okay, so back to the business. What surprised you most from coming out of the military and starting going private sector?
Well, it wasn't a change of the military to private sector for me because I had been in the reserves for 28 years, so I had concurrently served in the military and in industry. I think what what surprised me most about going into government contracting, which is not a business I had been in before. My husband was very experienced in it, but he was more focused on generating, developing new business, and I was focused on running the company. And so I think what surprised me most was how well equipped I was to do it and how much I enjoyed it.
So when you were growing up, did you grow up in a military family?
I did not grow up in a military family, but I grew up in a family with military history, actually going back many generations, you know, starting with an ancestor who served in the Revolutionary War. I had a grandfather on my mother's side who was a delegate at the GOP convention that nominated Abraham Lincoln. And then coming forward to my father was in the Army Air Corps in World War II, and he was the ordnance officer who actually loaded the atom bomb into the Enola Gay.
Wow. It is, but you also said that your father and your uncle were also not just military people, but they were also entrepreneurs.
Yes, they grew up in the Depression, and my father was the older brother, and they were always raising schemes to raise money, you know, to make money from boyhood on. I mean, my uncle told me that my father raised chickens in their garage in St. Petersburg to sell eggs to local restaurants, and which worked out fine until my uncle accidentally set the garage on fire.
Roast the chicken. Okay.
Roast the chicken.
Wes.
What were you like as a kid?
I think I was I was always interested in history and the history of the family, the history of wherever I was. I'm one of those people that reads every single marker on a museum wall. And the grandfather that I mentioned who had been a delegate to the nominating convention for Lincoln also built a house in New Jersey, in Beach Haven, New Jersey, the first house on that island, and we spent our summers there. So I think when I associate in my childhood is very happy times playing in that big Victorian house, which I still am an owner of today.
So you went into the Army as an officer, correct?
That's correct.
So you've had a lot of leadership training, and now you're leading a company.
That's correct.
What's your definition of leadership?
I think for me, leadership comes down to communication and branding, I would say. I'm probably different than many leaders because I really care about the public.
Communication and branding?
Communication and branding.
Not telling people what to do.
No, I'm very big on evoking a unique skill from a particular person. Yes,
did that come naturally to you, or did you learn it?
I'd say both. I've always had a lot of natural leadership coming from being, I've always been very interested in people and what makes them tick. And I think I have cultivated through many sources, not just the military, but many sources, I believe in the inherent creativity and capability of each person. So my leadership style is to mentor them and to bring out what they have to offer, and it often surprises me.
Yeah. What would you say your proudest moment up till now is, Louisa?
Well, I have many proud moments. Two of them recently are that in 2014, I was named by the National Association of Veteran Business Owners as the first woman entrepreneur, vetrepreneur, they call it, coined word, of entrepreneur and veteran. I was the first woman vetrepreneur of the year.
Great. What's the website address?
tape-llc.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Louisa Jaffe, who's the CEO and President of Technical Project Engineers, also known as TAPE. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, and I'd also especially like to thank our guests today, first being Tom Smith, who's the Executive Director of the American Society of Civil Engineers, Kathy Cannon, who's the Managing Partner DC Office for Kelly, Dreyer, and Warren, Mark Chichester, who's the President of Atlas Research, and finally Louisa Jaffe, the CEO and President of TAPE. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, for more about our executive leaders. I'd like to thank you, our business, our audience, for without you, we wouldn't have a show. And if you want to hear the show again, you can listen to it at businesstalkradio.net. This is Peter Schwartz, your host. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent